everybody, and welcome in to episode number 372 of the We Don't Know Either podcast. I'm Lindsay.
I'm Nick.
I'm Michael.
And I'm Catherine.
Catherine, district trivia host extraordinaire, welcome to the show. How's your quarantine going?
It's going well. It's been almost 50 days at this point, maybe more.
Yeah, time is relative. Numbers are relative. So Catherine, I told a partial truth to you in that we asked you to be on this show because, you know, we obviously love you, and that is definitely the truth. However, last week we were talking about obvious things that we learned very late in life. So you responded to that, and I wanted you to come on the podcast in part to tell us what was that obvious thing that you learned.
Oh, wow. This is a fact that I'm a little embarrassed to admit I hadn't known before. So in looking at the Instagram from District Trivia, I had been thinking about me hosting a session on the online version of Trivia. And one of the questions on that, I think it was worth 5 points or 6 points, had to do with the word cooties and what parasite that refers to. And for the life of me, I had no idea. But in reading the answer to the question, they actually said that it was referring to lice, as in if you're catching cooties from someone, the reason that was a thing is because you would be getting close to their head or hair kissing and getting lice from them. So cooties actually has to do with louse, and my mind was blown.
So wait, two things. First off, cooties is actually a real disease then. You can
it
catch cooties.
It actually is a real disease.
Okay. And second off, is louse the plural of lice?
That is a great question. I think that lice is the plural and a louse is a single.
A single, single lice topic. Is a louse.
Yes.
Okay. That makes sense.
I don't
that
think I knew
sense.
That either.
Yeah.
Wait, are we sure? Wait, so wait. So louse like is the single?
A wait. Louse is a louse multiple lice. That's how okay. I know it.
Got it. Okay. I didn't actually, Catherine, know about the cooties thing either. So I was, you know, Instagram days old when I read your response to that. And I'm sure that there are a lot of people listening as well that just learned that. And based on Michael's face while you were reading it, he put two and two together too.
Oh, absolutely.
I kind of at some point had thought like, oh, cooties maybe refers to kissing disease or something that you could get like on your
like
lips
mono.
Or something. But I hadn't realized that it was the bug that they were referring to.
Right.
Yeah. Ooh. Yeah. Not ideal. We had a couple other people that also volunteered this information. So my friend Ann said that she realized that the FedEx arrow or FedEx logo has an arrow in it, which I think I would say most people know because that was a big internet thing a couple years ago, but still pretty mind blowing when you see it. It's like yeah. Amazon, you know, from A to Z or whatever.
Right. It's also it's also a smirking smile.
Yeah.
The Amazon
yeah.
from A to Z. The arrow is also sort of a side smile. There's
yeah,
a bear.
Love,
there's a bear in the Toblerone logo.
Yeah. Yeah. I love those hidden. I love logo designs. It's a very fun thing that I'm just jealous. I don't have that skill of. And then I had another friend that said he didn't know that until, you know, his early 20s that pickles were cucumbers in their former life.
That's amazing. That's so funny.
And I honestly could spend the rest of this podcast going on and on about what I learned and what I didn't know that it was obvious to the rest of the world, but that is an entirely separate podcast. So we'll just save that for another day.
I have one more. It's not about me, but it was a conversation I had with somebody where after they said this, I walked away without ever speaking to them ever again. Like that's how I'm like, this is, you need to learn this a lot earlier. Basically, it was a friend of mine from back when I was in my 20s in college. It was my senior year of college. And he wrote a check and then he got a letter saying that the check bounced. And he looked at me and he goes, can you explain this to me? I don't understand. And I'm like, well, your check bounced. And he goes, that's not possible. There's still like 30 or 40 checks left in the checkbook.
Oh, no. Oh, man.
Nick, I told you that in confidence.
One of my roommates in college didn't know what the signature line on the check was for. And she was like, hey, can you tell me how to fill out this check for our landlord? And I was like, I probably should have vetted my roommates a little bit better for just if you don't know how to send the check, it's unlikely that you're going to pay said rent with a check, which was required. But we figured it out. So
I had a teacher in high school, Miss Brown, freshman year. She was a big believer in real skills.
Uh-huh.
So as a freshman in high school, she taught us to fill out a job application, write a check.
Write a resume.
resume. She it was a personal development class. I think it was career development and stuff like that. But she folded in all these things that were just like, by the time I got to that point where I was applying for jobs and stuff like that, I was like, I got this down. It was great, great class. So there's a lot of that stuff that I've had that similar. Like, I've had roommates that's like, I don't know how to write a check. And I was like, just Venmo me.
Yeah. I would be very forgiving if, you know, like, Google didn't exist. Like, I'm not going to fault anybody for not having that knowledge because, you know, people have different backgrounds, different, you know, education systems that didn't necessarily teach that class, which we had one of those. And they taught us a lot about taxes, which I did not pay attention to and would definitely have come in handy nowadays. And I'm like, oh, that class was helpful. I wish I would have saw its relevancy, but I didn't at 17, you know, years old. But she had no excuse. Just Google it, you know? Okay. Well, speaking of things to not Google.
I have a transition.
Yeah, please do. Get us started with our interesting facts. And of course, as always, play along at home with us and because you're smarter than us.
Speaking of leading off, my interesting fact is about Scrabble. Specifically, there's actually two different ways we can go on this. The transition way, which is specifically what is the most points you can get for a first word played in Scrabble? And I'll give you the word. Or what is the most points you can get for a word in Scrabble, period? Like, what's the highest number of points you can get on a single turn?
Ooh. I think I know the word, but I might not be sure about this.
Two parts. Single turn, highest points, or highest points on the first turn?
I think single turn.
Okay.
Anybody else? Anybody else have a strong opinion on this?
We can do both.
Okay.
Get after it.
I think I might know the second word, but I don't know how many points, so I'm curious to learn that.
The most points you can get on the first turn of any word that you can play is a word, you pronounce it muzikis, muzikis.
Yeah, that sounds like a real word. Definitely, that's real.
It's a seven-letter word. The definition is a Russian peasant. And it is the highest point value you can get on a single turn. And it has been done once at the National Scrabble Championship. It was in 2008, and it has the record for the highest opening score in any game of Scrabble.
Isn't that
lucky? How does that person know that word?
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, Nick. It is specifically referencing a Russian peasant prior to 1917, though. Is that correct?
Oh, yes, of course.
Yeah. Thank you, Google.
Okay.
I just wanted to feel smart.
I mean, Michael, I assumed that went without saying, but sure, if you'd like to point it out for the plebeians of the world, go ahead. And now Michael is typing plebeian into Google.
You spell it music.
So how many points for muzikis on its first term? Muzikis.
J is worth 10 points and Z is worth 10 points. So it has to be at least like 30.
How much is M worth? Is M worth 4? Am I crazy?
I think it's 4.
Vowels are usually 1 or 2. 1.
I think U is 2. I think U is worth 2. And I is probably worth 1.
Yeah. Is K worth 4 as well?
5.
K's worth 5. Okay, see. Nick's sweating a little bit because Catherine's like, oh no, I got this.
I know these trivia, or the Scrabble trivia questions.
So MU is 6.
And it has to start in the middle, which is double. If you get down more at least 4, then it's double word score, right? Are there any other double points or triple letter scores we should know?
I got to be honest, you're already more knowledgeable about Scrabble than I am.
So basically, you do get a double word score for going first.
So then all of those are doubled. So we said that's 4 plus 5 plus 10 plus 10. And
plus
then S
two
is
plus 1.
So that's, what did we say, 29 plus 2 plus 1? So my math is working
1
really
plus
well.
2 plus 1 plus 1.
One of our favorite phrases on this podcast, don't do math live.
All right. So, Lindsay, what's your guess?
Well, Nick, you know, I've been thinking a lot about this as somebody who has played very little Scrabble. I played Words with Friends for about a week, lost every game, and decided, as is my brand, I don't like things I'm not good at. And so I did not play Words with Friends very consistently, and I did not, I don't know, not a big Scrabble person. I'm more into the creative strategy games, not so much, you know, the words. So I know of Double Scores, and I know the basic strategy of Scrabble, but I would not know enough to lay out an intelligent guess. So I am just going to say 50.
50, okay. And then the math people?
I bought you guys a lot of time to answer this. We all have to get to our facts.
It has a Z and a J in it.
It does have a Z and a J.
But no K. Or it does have a K.
It's M-U-Z-J-I-K-S.
Great.
Muzix.
So then that's going to be... This is the math live part. I think 34 points.
Okay.
34 points. Maybe 33. I think I added an extra one. Times 2. So I'm going to go with 66.
66. And Michael?
I got 34 by my count.
Okay.
So I'm going to say 68.
Okay. I think Michael's right. Actually, Michael might be right on this one here.
Okay. So Michael is the closest without going over, given that he is the largest number that was given.
Because is it two doubles? So it's 32, 34.
It's only one double. But here's, okay. So M is 3, U is 1, Z is 10, J is 8.
Oh, J is 8, not 10.
Yep.
Okay.
I is 1, K is 5, and S is 1. So you have a 39 is your total of the letters itself. Okay. And then you have a times 2 for the double word score is 78 plus 50, which is the bonus for playing all 7 letters on one turn.
Oh, is
128. So 128 points is the total point total of Muzix on its first term, which is the most points you can get on turn one. And suffice it to say, if you do end up playing that, you can pretty much start the game over because that person just won.
Yeah, I would say, oh, come on. If you're in it, could you imagine being in national competition and then that person plays that word against you and you're just like, well, I'm done. I'm sunk. Right.
Just so,
come
just
on, that's bad luck.
A little bit of follow up information. The odds of drawing all 7 of those tiles and going first in a game is 1 in 2.88 e to the -12, which is a lot of zeros.
Yeah.
And it is essentially for the poker players that are in the room that are looking for a comparison. It's the odds of getting 2 royal flushes in a row.
Whoa.
So you're saying there's a chance.
Yeah. So it's not great. So and then the other side of my question was the most points you can get in any word play. The word is oxyfenbutazone. It is an anti-inflammatory medication used to treat arthritis.
Mm.
It is.
I thought that was the word
quizzing. You thought of what?
Quizzing.
Quizzing. Quizzing is a good word. Quizify is actually worth a little bit more. Is worth 419 points.
Whoa.
Yeah, but quizzing is very good. There's a lot of Q words on the highest point values ever. Sort of.
I'm shocked.
Yeah. But yeah, oxyfenbutazone. Which is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. It is a 15-letter word, which means you have to stick your 7 letters in amongst 8 other letters that are already on the board in the appropriate places while also scoring the correct X's on double letter scores and Z's on double letter scores and triple letter scores. And the benefit of this is that it actually hits 3 triple word scores. So it's 9 times the actual score. While
what's the number?
So there? The number is 1,778 points for the single word. And by the way, this is strictly theoretical. It has never been played in actual competition for, I don't know, reasons.
for a reason. Yeah. No, that's just actually that's just my strategy when I'm playing Scrabble or Words with Friends, is I just make sure that they can't play that word. And that's right. really what I'm focusing on. Instead of trying to make words, I'm trying to prevent them from playing that word. So
Lindsay's opening
one that so far.
Lindsay's opening word is always is.
Yes.
Build off of that. I dare you.
I played the word quiz once and I was pretty happy with myself.
Yeah.
Well, Nick, you wanted me to build off of something, right? And to build off of letters, you need to build them into words. And words become sentences that are then written into scripts. Scripts are used to film movies and write movies. And so therefore, my fact to build on yours is movie related. Thank you. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
Deep breath, Mike. Deep breath.
Thank you. There's one right there.
USA.
Okay, so my fact is about the Academy Awards and the Oscars. I started originally down this path because I wanted to know about screen time for villains. And I said to myself, Jaws, for example, is an infamous example of this because the animatronic shark wasn't working. The editor of the movie said, yo, Spielberg, it is much scarier if we don't see the shark. Spielberg and the producers were like, yo, this is very expensive. We need to use this. And then she was like, nah. Yo, look how scary this is. So Jaws, I think, only had like 4 to 5 minutes of screen time. Hannibal Lecter with Anthony Hopkins, another really good example.
Right. And I want to know. Yeah, he was like 15 minutes or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. 15 minutes. Darth Vader in A New Hope was like 6 to 8 minutes of screen time. But nobody could really, from what my very long amount of research, since I have time to do a lot of research now in quarantine, there wasn't really a set measure for what counts as screen time. You think that it would be simple, right? If they're on the screen, they get, but some were counting for conversations, some were counting for appearances. So I couldn't find the exact numbers or the exact records for villains or even just actors that won for the shortest amount of screen time, like Anthony Hopkins is always listed in that example, and what the records varied for actors that won for the shortest amount of lines in screenplay. So I just took it very simply and wanted to know, what is the length of the shortest winner for Best Picture? So we're going to just go runtime because that is way easier than screen time. Runtime is pretty set in stone. So I'd want to know, what is the shortest runtime for a Best Picture Academy Award winner? So what is the shortest runtime? Go.
Okay, so I think we should all start by listing off all of the Best Picture Oscar winners. So
okay, let's go in order. I'll start with Parasite.
I was going to go with a much broader answer and say, well, it's going to be between half an hour and an hour and a half. That's all I got.
Well, I was going to ask you what the longest runtime for Best Picture, but I felt like that one was kind of probably get the movie pretty straight up.
Probably, but I'm not very good at this. It's the awards, especially Oscars, is something that's not really in my wheelhouse. I don't pay attention to it. So I feel badly about it. So you said Parasite was the last one. Was The Shape of Water the one before that?
I think so.
Okay. And then there's the one where they...
For the record, is not going to help you guys that much, right? So I would recommend, before we go on a long list, because we have to get moving here in terms of getting to everybody else's facts, I would just think more in terms of movie length. So for reference, Gone with the Wind is the longest runtime of a Best Picture winner. So Gone with the Wind is the longest runtime for any film that's won Best Picture. And that is 238 minutes long, so 3 hours and 58 minutes. No one has crossed the 4 hour mark for Best Picture winner yet, but you know, who's not to say that there isn't a chance? So 3 hours, 58 minutes is the one end of the spectrum. So I want to know what the other end is. You don't have to tell me the movie, but what is that length?
How long was Silence of the Lambs? Was it an hour and 45 minutes? You're just looking for the length now.
I'm looking for the runtime of the shortest Oscar or the shortest movie that won Best Picture.
Okay. And Catherine, your thinking was between a half hour and an hour and a half?
I mean, I think an hour and a half, there are probably plenty of movies in that range, right?
Yeah. The 90 minute Oscar winner.
And then I don't think that there could be a movie that's less than maybe 50 minutes. Unless it's super avant-garde or something.
But. Yeah, that, I mean, there's a line somewhere. At some point, they've come up with, like, movie short or, you know, that kind of thing where anything under 20 minutes is out or under whatever minutes is out.
For the record, the short film is defined as an original motion picture that has a runtime of 40 minutes or less, including all the credits.
Okay.
So a short film, it is its own category, and it is a runtime of 40 minutes or less, including all the credits.
So that just increased the floor of Catherine's guest to 40 minutes, right?
Yeah.
So now you have 40 minutes to an hour and a half. I'm going to go at the high end of that. I'm going to say 90 minutes. That's my guess for reasons.
I'm going to say 82 minutes.
Okay.
See, I'm thinking the exact opposite. I think it's at least 100 minutes. I'm thinking in the hour 45 mark. So I'm going to say 100 minutes.
Okay, 100 minutes. Nick, you hit it spot on. So you can thank, I think, Catherine for that assist there. Because she was dead on with her thinking as to what that film was. So it was 1955 Marty, and it was 90 minutes long. It's a drama romance about a middle-aged butcher and a school teacher who have given up on the idea of love and meet at a dance and fall for each other. I haven't seen it. But it is 90 minutes and the shortest best picture winner at the Academy Awards. Annie Hall is number two at 93 minutes. That was from 1977. And then Sunrise is number three, 94 minutes long. Silence of the Lambs is right in the middle at 2 hours and 18 minutes of a runtime. And then all of the top five films in terms of length, they're all over 3 hours and 20 minutes. So Lord of the Rings, Return of the King is fifth longest runtime, 3 hours, 21 minutes, and so on up through Godfather Part Two, Ben-Hur, Lawrence of Arabia, and then Gone with the Wind at 3 hours and 58 minutes. So long time to watch the movies. Can't tell you what the individual screen time for each actor is, but that's how I got to this fact today. So, Michael, I think that you were up next here with you had a pretty easy transition from what we talked about earlier.
Yeah, I do. Let me just get loosened up for this. Speaking of the Academy Awards, that's how you do a segue.
Well, you'd be nothing without my script.
That is very, that is unfortunate. Speaking of the Academy Awards, I also went down a little bit of a rabbit hole while researching. Specifically, I was interested in movies that were, that won basically the top five categories.
Okay.
So that's Best Picture, Best Director, Best Actor, Best Actress, and Best Screenplay, whether that's adapted or original.
I love these top five questions, by the way, like speaking to trivia writing more generally, since it's you might know the top five and then you're just trying to figure out which movie or show fits into that.
Right.
Uh-huh.
Did we lose Lindsay?
No, I'm right here. I just was thinking out loud. You heard me talk for a while, so I was trying to back it up and let you guys shine.
but in the entire history of the Academy Awards, only three movies have ever swept the top five categories. So go ahead and name any of those movies.
Silence of the Lambs.
Gone with the Wind.
I was also going to say Gone with the Wind. Okay,
Gone with the Wind won 4 out of 5. It did not win Best Actor for Clark Gable.
Okay. No, Silence of the Lambs. Definitely.
Silence of the Lambs is one of them.
That was going to be my next guess. Was Silence of the Lambs.
By the way, Silence of the Lambs, also the only widely accepted horror film.
Correct.
To win Best Picture.
Yes. Just asked that question on a podcast recently.
Oh, really?
Written up. Yeah. Friday night, in fact.
Oh, there you go.
Now, I was very drunk when I asked it, but I did write it, so I did remember.
I would want to know what constitutes a horror movie, because I think that Silence of the Lambs for me is more of like a suspense psychological thriller, but like, are psychological thrillers technically horror movies? Are horror movies all psychological? Like, I wouldn't cast, if you were asking me to name my favorite horror movies of all time, even though Silence of the Lambs is one of my top favorite movies, it's just excellent film, I wouldn't categorize that as a horror movie for me, but you know.
From the Oscar perspective, a suspense genre film is not a thing. There is no suspense genre in the Oscar nomination categories. There is a thriller category, And the things that have fallen into the thriller category over time are like Alfred Hitchcock movies. Like those are kinds of thrillers. So Michael is correct in that the only quote unquote horror movie to have won is Silence of the Lambs. Although, Lindsay, you are correct. There is much debate as to what qualifies as a horror film.
Yeah, I would say that my next guess for this, Michael, I can't guess it because I know that it's wrong. But like in terms of films that have won all of the Oscars in the history of time, like you would say Titanic, but we all know that Leo didn't win for Titanic.
Correct. Right.
But you know, Titanic won every other Oscar except for Leo's.
Right.
Prior
to Titanic, the record I think was held by Ben-Hur for most Oscars in a single award ceremony.
Yeah, and like
Lord Ben-Hur, not one of them.
Yeah, you would think that like Lord of the Rings would be up, but like you know, it wasn't a main lead actress award for that.
West Side Story.
Not West Side Story.
I'm trying to think of big films that have all of the things.
Shakespeare in Love.
Yeah.
Shakespeare in Love. Did Shakespeare in Love win Best Picture?
It did.
Mm-hmm. I didn't know that.
That would actually came up in my research.
Could it be something recent or one of them? Maybe.
I was just going to ask if you guys wanted the years for the other two.
Schindler's Argo. List?
Not Schindler's List.
Argo.
Not Argo.
Moonlight.
Not Moonlight.
All right, yeah, give us the years.
So you guys got Silence of the Lambs,
Marty.
Which is 1991. Nope. One was in 1975 and the other's in 1934. I'm not anticipating
75 anybody get. Is Nicholson is One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
That is correct.
Yeah. And then 34, I got nothing.
Yeah, 34 is also a Clark Gable movie.
Oh, Casablanca.
Not Casablanca.
I don't think that won for Best Picture. I don't think.
I think it was beaten out by something else.
Now I have to look that up.
So, yep. That the 1934 movie from the 7th Academy Awards, It Happened One Night.
Oh.
Got it.
So It Happened One Night, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, and Silence of the Lambs. The only three movies that have swept the top five categories at the Oscars.
Also, I'm an idiot. It's not Clark Gable in Casablanca. It's Humphrey Bogart.
Humphrey Bogart, yeah.
Duh. Lindsay, get it together. Oh, my gosh. I sounded so intelligent when I did my fact, but when I'm not doing my fact, it just goes off the rails. Off the rails, tell you what. So I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Humphrey. I did not mean to disrespect you.
That being said, Lindsay, you are correct in that I quit.
Casablanca.
Thank you. Casablanca was the Best Picture winner in 1943, so it did win Best Picture.
Cool. Speaking I need some movies, stuff. Though. I'm going to speak of TV. Move Ooh. Over to Ooh, a right. TV question.
Yeah, Catherine. Nice segue. Go, Catherine.
It's related. Really, and this one hopefully is something that people have maybe at the top of their minds, but maybe not, because we've all been watching, at least I have been watching a lot of TV in quarantine. So related to Netflix, which TV show on that Netflix has spent the most days at number one by any TV show?
Is this original Netflix original stuff or is it like anything like Friends or The Office?
That is a great question. I think it is of anything.
Okay. Well, then I'm going with Friends or The Office.
I would have said The Office would have been my guess too in terms of like what is kind of a generational streaming thing, right? Because young people are now discovering The Office and watching it, and more mature folks as well, you know, are finding it too. So The Office would be a very safe guess there, but I'm gonna guess from Catherine's lack of confirming that is wrong.
Not The Office, according to the source. We'll post later.
So, sorry if I missed it. Number one, according to what? Most streamed on Netflix?
I think it's based on Netflix, correct? And the article I found is from, it's called The Wrap, but I confirmed from one other source that seems to be the right answer. The Office is a really good guess. I wonder, though, if it would be top or just in the top 10. This says that it was the absolute
number one. Yeah.
Right,
because it's days in a row.
Right. But is it by rating, like quality? Is it by
number it'd be by number
streaming?
Of views. The Netflix rankings okay, are, yeah, is number of views. And okay. You know, thinking more and more about this as Catherine keeps talking and everybody's going through it. Things like The Office and Friends, I think, would be the longest running series, like in the top 25. Like they're always in the top 10 or they're always in the, but number one would change based on what's popular.
Yeah.
Right.
They have so a ton of viewers. The Office does.
Yeah. So like The Witcher would have been the number one. Ooh, is it Witcher? Because that was like December 20th of 2019. So it could have been like a whole month.
How about Parks and Rec?
Not Parks and Rec, although another great TV show.
Making of a Murderer.
Not what I'm seeing for this.
Is it Tiger King?
Tiger King. And the second follow-up to this, to see if we can guess, is how many days did it hold that number one spot?
32.
That's a really good guess. That's almost exactly what I was going to throw out there. I'm going to say 33.
Michael, any guess for you?
I'm trying to think of how long we've been in quarantine and therefore going from there. I'll say 40.
So I think, Lindsay, you said 30, right?
32.
So it's actually a lower number than all of these guesses, which was a bit surprising. But this is saying 15 days. So people get restless quickly, I suppose.
Oh, yeah. Now, once you binge watch something, you move on to something else. And that then becomes the new number one.
Exactly. Yeah. So Tiger King's 15 days. Overall, as the top title on Netflix, is far and away the most days spent at number one by any show or movie on the service. That's what wow. They say here.
Yeah, and you would think, though, like, you know, I said 32 days just because it was slightly over a month, which makes sense in the quarantine that, you know, everybody is discovering it week after week and binging it. But now that I'm thinking about it, it really is condensed. And just even to hold the number one spot for 15 days is still pretty impressive because there is so much right. on Netflix that you would think if you were going to scale that and draw that out, in a graph or something, that it would be a different thing every day.
Exactly.
So just to be able to hold it for 15 days is really, really impressive. So yeah, Tiger King.
Pretty remarkable. Cats. What's interesting yeah. to me too is that it didn't, at least this was a little trickier to find a reputable source for, but it wasn't the most watched show ever, or even the most watched in all of March. Does anyone know what the most watched Netflix show ever was or is?
The most watched Netflix show ever? Well, that would have to be something that's been on the longest, right?
Is this Netflix original or anything that's just on, that's streamed there?
Here I'm still seeing anything.
Oh, okay. Most watched show ever. Ooh, I still think that one of the Making of the Murderers should be up there. That was so popular for so long.
No, it's going to be like Orange is the New Black because there's 9 seasons mm-hmm. of it and somebody gets involved. New viewers get involved every season and rewatch the originals.
And I'm gonna narrow this in a little bit because, okay. again, this was trickier given the source, so it won't be my official question, but let's limit it to 2019.
Oh, just 2019?
Yeah. This one has a better source.
I'm just trying to think of a really popular thing, like popular shows, and all my stuff is just a little bit out there, so I'm not in the mainstream here.
What are your favorite shows, Lindsay?
Well, you know, I just, you know, Community's gone mainstream, but I want the record show that I liked it before it got popular.
Same.
What was that? Did Stranger
Things? Sorry, I didn't want to admit it that.
Did Stranger Things have its third season this summer?
So Stranger Things is actually what I'm seeing here as the answer.
Yeah.
So you totally nailed that.
Yeah.
Never got into Stranger Things. No one could tell me what genre it was. And I was like, I don't want to watch a horror thing. And no one is telling me that it's not horror or suspense. I don't know.
It's not scary.
It's thriller.
Yeah. It's your thriller, suspense, 1980s retro. What would it be? It would be Dungeons. It's Dungeons and Dragons meets Stand By Me. Not Stand By Me. Stand By Me.
None of those words that you're saying mean anything to me. So I think that I will go do my Google and continue to binge Community as we go. But we actually are way over time.
Yep.
So we are going to say that our secret phrase is meow, holler at your Tiger Kings. So meow will be your secret phrase that means nothing because
it, means, it has happen. To do with Tiger King.
Yeah.
Yes.
They started off with all you cool cats and kittens.
Just a quick note. Wondery also did a really good podcast on this. It was a 6-parter a while back. I know we don't like to plug other podcasts, but as long as we're talking Joe Exotic.
No, we don't mind plugging other podcasts when we have time to do it. Not when I'm trying to wrap up the show, Michael. So again, we are available for private events. So hire us, check out the We Don't Know Either Live Facebook group for nightly events. And of course, as always, get our book if you haven't yet. But this has been the We Don't Know Either podcast. Thanks, Catherine, for joining us. I'm Lindsay.
I'm Nick.
I'm Michael.
And I'm Catherine. Thanks, guys.
And we don't know either.
Bye.